Good afternoon, everybody. This is Dwayne McFarlane. We're talking about the third episode of the RSP Fantasy Film and Data Podcast. As usual, I'm joined by Jarrett Moyer, bringing the great film work. How are you doing today, Jarrett? Can't believe we're headed into week four.
Yeah, we have a lot of good stuff to tackle this week. 3 weeks of football in the books. Before we get started, I'm sure most of you heard, just want to congratulate Dwayne. He joined the team over at Establish the Run. Doing excellent work with his data analysis, utilization analysis, the stuff we talk about here. So definitely, if you're not already doing that, make sure you check out his work over there, as well as obviously at Matt Waldman's RSP, mattwaldmanrsp.com. And he's still, producing work over at Football Guys. So you can find Dwayne everywhere, but, let's get back on topic here. Week three analysis, we have some great topics. Why don't we go ahead and get started, Dwayne? I think, the first thing we'll talk about is an offense that, is really vexing, and it's been vexing for years, but scores a lot of points. So a very interesting offense to talk about, and that is, the unit led by Tom Brady over in New England.
Yeah, absolutely. Vexing is a great word. I mean, I marvel at what Bill Belichick and this coaching staff can do. So I can't wait to hear what you have to say about them on film. From a data perspective, just real quick, the rundown on this team. I don't know if many folks know this, but last week you had fullback James Devlin actually inactive, for this game. And now he's actually been put onto IR with a neck issue. And so in that game, it's the same week also where they parted ways with Antonio Brown. So there was a lot of questions, Jared, we don't have, Gronkowski, obviously, anymore. You still haven't gotten Ben Watson back from his, four-game suspension for the first part of the year. So they don't have a lot of tight ends. They don't have the fullback. So traditionally, over this last year and a half to 2 years, especially once they drafted Sony Michel, they've incorporated a lot more of 21 looks, a lot more 12 looks. So for folks that don't know 21, you've got two running backs and one tight end, and then 12, you've got, one running back and two tight ends. So a lot of heavier looks. But this last weekend, what we saw, Jay, in week three, 11 personnel, which is three wide receivers, one tight end, one running back, 75% of the snaps, which we've seen New England do in the history. So, to your point, this vexing thing, this is a team that is always working to get the best personnel groupings based on the talent they have onto the field. And then, of course, when they're in years where it's not as lean and they have the ability to go in a variety of ways, they'll do that based on the matchup. Like historically, even looking back, they would always spread out, those big, heavy seven front Steeler teams. I remember Tom Brady doing that in his second or third year. I remember them coming out and running five wides, and running four receivers a ton against teams like the Steelers. So this last week, wasn't really any different. The 21 personnel dropped to only four plays, for the whole game. 10 personnel was there actually. So that's four wide receivers. That was the second most used formation, for the Pats this last week. So to your point, Jay, they're really, they're vexing. Looks like they're trying to get the right personnel on the field based on what they can do. And I think this means big things for a few players. Number one, we saw Sony Michel last week. Wasn't a very good week for him. Jay, he only saw 22% of the snaps, only 33% of the rushing attempts. And with James White inactive, Rex Burkhead was the man. 74% of the snaps, 41% of the rushing attempts. He ran a route on 76% of Tom Brady's dropbacks. So to me, when I see this, and I tweeted about this before the game, for those folks that like DFS, I really felt like Burkhead was probably in line for 15 to 20 touches because he's the better fit. If they're going to have to run more 11 personnel and their goal is to spread out the opposing defense and throw quick passes and do things of that nature and run out of the 11 personnel, which they did, they ran last week out of the 11 personnel, 89% of their runs came from that set. So it was a big day for Rex Burkhead. And yeah. I'll pause there, Jay, yeah, and get your thoughts.
Yeah, definitely want to jump in here. I had also gone back and forth with some people about what James Devlin's injury means for the Patriots and specifically Sony Michel. I think commonly the fullback is thought of as somewhat of a replaceable part in an offense. They brought up a player from the practice squad, you know, on the international exemption, Jacob Johnson. So everybody's like, oh, they'll just plug him in. A fullback doesn't really matter anyway. Well, we saw of all those utilization trends you just mentioned, the Patriots never ran their heavy 21 personnel in terms of having, you know, Michelle and a fullback and an I formation. Their two back sets, actually, most of them that I saw in the game were Rex Burkhead and Brandon Bolden lined up in a split back formation, which is something pretty rare to see in the NFL these days. But Sony Michel's usage as a heavy, you know, 21 personnel running gap style run plays, which is that's those types of plays have provided the bulk of his production ever since the end of last year, where his production really picked up. You know, that was absent from the game plan. And that's because the Patriots, as you alluded to, they're not a team that has a system and it's just, hey, we're going to plug a player in here and we're going to run our system. I mean, obviously they have a system, they have a structure of how they call plays, but they're not tied to a specific style of play. What they're going to do is use the players they have on hand. This is why they didn't feel like they had to go replace Gronkowski. They knew that they couldn't get a Gronkowski. So rather than try to, you know, plug someone in his role and keep their offense the same, they said, you know, what are the best players that we can add? And we'll use those players in ways that, you know, highlights their strengths. And so when they lose a guy who has a vital role in a specific style of play, they're not going to just plug in the next guy and run that. And we saw that this week that, you know, those, as I already said, those style of plays, those gap heavy, you know, running power up the middle, they were absent from the game plan. And I don't see that changing. You know, they have Johnson on the roster. I don't think that he's going to work his way into, and I'd like to, I don't know the numbers off the top of my head, but, you know, the snap share for what James Devlin was on the field, you can basically think of that as how often are the Patriots looking to run Sony Michel inside.
Right. Yeah. Actually, you know, from a fullback standpoint, Jacob Johnson got a whole 3%. Of the snaps.
Yeah, and those were,
so
those
it,
were,
it wasn't a lot. Those might have been special teams. I don't even know.
No, those were kneel downs at the end of the game.
Well, there you go.
So they never lined up in an I formation with Sony Michel back there, which is something that they did on a significant portion of their plays this year and last.
It's kind of funny, Jay, you know, when I think about this, because when I think about, you know, when I think back to college, right, and I think about Georgia and I think about that offense, Sony Michel was really seen more, right, as the guy that could kind of do everything. He wasn't a bad receiver out of the backfield. You know, they would move him around the formation, and really Nick Chubb was the guy that they would line up and run, you know, between the tackles mostly. They would do some other things with Chubb, and both were really good players. But it's kind of interesting because now here we are with the Patriots, and it seems like, couldn't Sony Michel do some of those things? I mean, what are you seeing when you see Michel on the tape, or when you think back to the way you evaluated him from Georgia, you know, because fantasy owners are going to be wondering here. So if they're not going to run power, is really that the only way Sony Michel can fit into this offense?
Well, Michel was a good receiver at Georgia in the sense that he catches the ball well. You know, his style, his athletic style doesn't really lend itself well to the type of routes that the Patriots typically ask their running backs to run. You know, you think of James White, Rex Burkhead, more shifty players who have good agility, you know, running option routes, running angle routes, running, you know, flat
stuff
passes.
Past the line, stuff yeah. Past the line of scrimmage too.
Yeah, exactly. Getting downfield, out of the backfield, you know, it's not just a bunch of checkdowns. And so Sony Michel is obviously not that style of player. You know, he's a guy that they will run some screen passes to. He'll occasionally get a checkdown look, but he's not the type of guy who's going to be able to create a ton of separation running option routes or angle routes, just because, you know, his biggest weakness is probably that lateral agility, the ability to cut sharply, you know, at a 90 degree angle, for instance, for either one of those routes. And so, you know, when you take away those linear style of runs, he's, you know, really curvilinear, you know, he's explosive, he'll hit a crease and go. When you take those style of runs away and you take them out of the playbook, now he's left to run zone plays, and all of his carries that I saw this weekend were zone style plays. So either inside zone, split zone, wide zone. And these are plays that, you know, you need a little more patience. You need to let the holes develop. You need to be able to cut to access a hole. You don't know where the hole is going to pop open. And Michelle really struggled on those plays this week. And he's never been a great zone runner dating back to the Georgia days. Our colleague over at the RSP, Matt Waldman, you know, commented on this going back that Nick Chubb was the much better inside zone runner. And I agree with that. And, you know, we've seen that with Michelle, and that he's really thrived on those linear gap style plays where he has a hole that's established for him and he hits that crease, gets downfield. So, you know, he's not a guy that I would really, think has a versatile skill set. And I don't think the Patriots will try to force him into the offense just because, you know, he's a guy they drafted early last year.
Yeah, So one of the things I get with Establish the Run, which is really awesome. And if you guys, you know, that are out there that love data, you haven't heard of it, but Sports Info Solutions, and they've got this awesome thing known as the Data Hub that you can subscribe to. But they, all the stuff you hear Jay talking about, like, and I know Jay's super excited. I sent him, you know, kind of a screenshot of some of this, like all the different options I can click on here. And he came back and he was like, holy crap, like that looks really awesome. But I was just sitting here listening to you talk about this. So one of the things I can do like in here, Jay, is I can literally, I know you already watched the game, but I can click on blocking schemes for rushing plays, you know, pullers outside the numbers, 2+ pullers, backside pullers. So for those of you that don't know the way, you know, when Jay talks about, you know, a gap or a power scheme, typically you've got a pulling lineman that then that running back is then going to follow. And so in the previous weeks, you know, Sony Michel, when I was looking at this, you know, had like 27 attempts on those kind of runs. And then right now I'm looking at it for this week and it's just like what Jay says. I'm sitting here and I can't find the Patriots. I see 4 runs that are like that, but they, even those were all to Burkhead. Sony Michel didn't get any attempts. I'm just scrolling to the bottom to make sure I'm seeing this right. But yeah, like what you saw on film. I mean, zero plays like that. Everything for him, just like what you said, was it was all inside zone.
Yeah, and really it just shows you the importance of James Devlin. I mean, the guy is an excellent blocker, and they really built that whole personnel package, that whole strategic component of their game plan is built around him. And so, you know, this is really where the data analysis, the film analysis, really understanding what the Patriots are trying to do can give you a leg up in your fantasy league. As you mentioned, and I was right there with you, but I didn't even see your tweet. When I heard that James Devlin was missing the game, you know, I had Sonny Michel in, you know, several, I don't know the percentage, but he was heavily represented in my DFS lineups. I took him out of essentially every lineup once I heard Devlin wasn't going to be in there, because I was like, you know, the Patriots they're not going to force that stuff. They're going to run 11 yeah. personnel. Burkhead's going to be out there. You know, I didn't know that Brandon Bolden would have a play share that he did, but even he was out there, you know, almost equally as Sonny Michel. And so,
yeah, so think of this, like the one other jumping in here just real quick, Jay, the other context here to your point about not forcing it. I think it's super important to also think about the game script. This is a team that, I mean, this is a game where the Patriots, you know, they won by 15. They were playing against the Jets with their third string quarterback. The Patriots led the whole game and they still didn't use Sonny Michel. So I think this is for fantasy owners. You know, I don't want to be, you know, an absolutist, but I feel like this is almost a slam dunk at this point, Jay, that I want to get out from under Sonny Michel this season any way I can. If I'm in season long, if his name has value, I don't want to deal with this, because with Devlin being gone, we don't know if, to your point, if the other fullback can get up to speed. And it's not like Devlin's just, oh, he's just a fullback, to your point. He was a really good fullback. And so to me, this looks like the play is, if you can get away from Sonny Michel, you should. James White and Rex Burkhead are probably going to be more valuable, because I just don't see it, Jay. If you're in a game where you're constantly leading and you could have taken Tom Brady out of harm's way, right? He's the key to your whole offense, even more by just pounding Sonny Michel, and they didn't. They still kept throwing.
Yeah, I mean, they're going to go with the personnel package that they think gives them the best chance to win. And that's based somewhat on the defensive matchup, but also just based on the guys they have on hand. And we've seen them adapt their offense, you know, over the years, playing any style of offense really to do those things.
Yeah, 75% from 11, 31 dropbacks and 24 rushing attempts, all from 11. Those by far led the team you know, out of their plays this weekend.
Yeah. So, you know, we both agree on Sony Michel, down on him, but there are several
Patriots. Real quick, Jay, if you had to peg him into a hole and say Sony Michel is an RB X the rest of this season.
I mean, I think
he's not an RB2 anymore. No. What is he?
Honestly, I mean, I think it drops him down to low end RB3 at the most, you know, like even RB4. I mean, the volume is not going to be there. He has no pass catching upside. He's really just going to be touchdown dependent, and they don't even have their optimal goal line package in place. So, you know, it's going to be, they're going to be a lot of weeks like last week where he is under 20 yards, either with or without a touchdown. And so, you know, the ceiling is low, the floor is low, but there are several Patriots.
Who does it help? Yeah, sorry.
Exactly. Yeah, man, you cut me off there. Now, I'm interested to hear your thoughts on this. I mean, I think there are some obvious candidates. We already talked about Rex Burkhead. I don't think his role will be so prominent as it was last week. Remember, James White missed the game because of, you know, congratulations to him. Sounds like his wife was in labor, had a child. So, you know, he will be back, and him and Burkhead really have overlapping roles. James White is a guy that Tom Brady really trusts. And with Tom Brady, you know, he's such a rhythm and anticipation thrower that having his trust really is the key to unlocking volume. And really, when you look at the receiving core, they have Edelman, they have Josh Gordon, and really White is probably the third option after those guys, and would even be targeted more frequently than Gordon, because Gordon tends to really be used to stretch the defense with downfield routes. So he's not getting, you know, high target volume, even though he has a valuable role in the offense. So James White really, you know, his value increases substantially with Devlin being out. And then obviously those other guys, Edelman, you know, Burkhead, even Philip Dorsett with more 11 personnel sets, he'll be on the field a lot more. So those are the guys that I'd really be targeting. And Tom Brady as well. I mean, I think that, you know, you look at his year last year, we had a disappointing fantasy season. I think he really could put up some impressive numbers this year, because even the games where they have that positive game script, like last week against the Jets, they just kept throwing the ball.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think, you know, obviously Edelman and Gordon are going to be, it's great to own them. And to your point, you know, James White as well. I think what we'll see when James White comes back, it's, you don't like it because it's still going to be a three back rotation, but I think that Sony Michel is now the third leg, right? It's really going to be, Burkhead is probably going to lead the team in rushing attempts each week. And he'll get a few passing targets. And then I would say James White, to your point, he'll sprinkle in a few carries. I don't think they're going to overload him with running work, but he'll probably get more than what we're used to. And I think, to your point, he could easily on any given week be the number one receiving target, you know, for the team. But I think there's going to be plenty of weeks where he'll be the two or the three as far as a receiver on the team. The guy that's probably most likely available, you know, for everybody in a league besides Burkhead, I think Burkhead is an RB3 with RB2 upside, you know, the rest of the way, you know, in leagues that, you know, have at least 12 teams. You know, if you're in a 10 teamer, you're in an 8 teamer, you know, that's going to, obviously you got to accordingly push him down, you know, a little bit, but I think he's good enough at enough different things that Belichick really values that. He values those versatile, smart players. And that's what Burkhead is on the field. He just has to stay healthy. But I think James White, you know, to your point, I think this pretty much, I don't know what you think, but I think this probably locks him into RB2 territory pretty much every week.
Yeah, especially, you know, PPR format, he's going to be gold.
Yeah,
he's
absolutely
gonna be gold. So he's a guy that I want in my lineup.
To your point on Dorsett, he's the other guy that's most likely available. And man, if they're going to be running 11 all the time, he could really end up as a wide receiver 3, Jay. And this is a guy that to start the season, you might have thought, hey, he's a guy I'll stash. He's a wide receiver 5 kind of guy. But so many things have broken his way. You know, they've tried to replace him, you know, and get Antonio Brown and do some different things. But now with this Devlin thing, plus, you know, the fact that there's no AB, I just, you know, and he looks, you know, he and Tom Brady seem to be grooving. He's the guy that Brady's looking for, you know, on some of these deep balls. So if you look at his, you know, snaps, you know, up to 92% this last week, his routes per dropback were 91%. Now, Julian Edelman did miss most of the second half. He got injured. So Josh Gordon saw 24% of the targets. He's obviously out there almost all of the time. And if you're in a super deep league, and we know how Edelman is an older guy and he's a little bit brittle, whenever he went down, Jacoby Myers is the guy that stepped in. He played 63% of the snaps this last week, and he saw, you know, 63% of the time Tom Brady dropped back, he was in a route. So if you're in a super deep league, you know, 12 man, you know, 20 deep rosters, or even 14 man type leagues, Jacoby Myers is a guy that he's a great stash, because the Patriots are going to run a little bit more 10 personnel. That was their second most used package last week. And if Edelman goes down, he is the guy that they're going to utilize. If you look at his slot work, in this last week, he lined up in the slot 86% of the time, which was number one on the Pats.
Yeah, I'm with you on all that stuff. One thing I would like to add is about Josh Gordon. I know that he's obviously going to be rostered in pretty much every format you're in, but, you know, his potential buy low candidate, he hasn't had that explosive game just yet. In this past game, in the first half, he and Tom Brady were somewhat out of sync. And, you know, he came in midway through the season last year. The Patriots' offense for receivers, there are a lot of side adjustments, a lot of option routes. It's something that takes a while to learn. You know, he had a limited package last year, and he had success with that. But incorporating him into the full offense through the offseason, remember, he missed most of training camp dealing with, you know, his off-field issues, got reinstated only a week or two before the season. But in the second half, he and Brady seemed to find a rhythm. He made two spectacular catches, one down the left sideline, you know, contested catch where he caught the ball falling out of bounds, toe tapped, you know, it was almost a touchdown, went out of bounds around the 3 yard line. And then there was a deep post later in the game across the middle where he caught it between three defenders, took a hit, held on. And Brady was targeting him more frequently after those plays. Earlier in the game, they also did something that they didn't do much last year, which was try to force targets to him to get him involved in the game and get him going, you know, like tunnel screens or hitches or just hook routes. And so, you know, like I said, he hasn't had that breakout game yet, but with the change, with the changes in their you know, play calling patterns, more 11 personnel, more passing, I think he's going to break out at some point. I think he'll get more volume consistently as the year wears on. And, you know, he's a guy that if he does continue to improve that chemistry, you know, he has wide receiver one upside. And so if you can buy him for a somewhat cheaper price now, I would definitely go ahead and try to do that.
Yeah. And this week may offer an even better chance. He's probably going to be shadowed by Tre'Davious White. You know, and the Buffalo over the last several meetings has completely shut Tom Brady down, and their defense is looking as good as it's ever been. So if there's ever a week to fade Tom Brady, and I'm not saying that you do it, but this will be the week. He's definitely not a guy that I'm going to try to force into my DFS lineups. But Josh Gordon is the main thing here. I'm totally with you, Jay. If you can buy him low, and this week may even, you know, if you can get it done now, just do it. Don't wait. But after this next week, you know, it could be an even lower price. Now, if he goes out and just torches Tre'Davious White, which isn't out of the range of outcomes for a guy like him, I mean, literally watch out. That would like put him up in my mind at the wide receiver one tier for the rest of the year. He's a guy that you can pretty much consider as potentially being in the top 12 each week.
Yeah. So I think we've, I think we've covered the Patriots pretty well and the implications for, you know, it's funny for a fullback being injured, it changes everything.
But I love that because that's like real. Look, we're talking about fantasy for this show, but really what you and I love the most is just football. You know, and obviously, you know, your coaching background and what you know, I love this because I think it just helps share with people, you know, so there's so much more going on than what people really, you know, think. And I think that's, you know, the people that listen to the show, that's what they love. They love to think about this stuff. So I think it's awesome. But to your point, so you just talked about a coach and a staff, Jay, that is vexing, knows how to vex, knows how to flex, knows how to. They pretty much get everything right. The Patriots know what to do. They know how to get the right people on the field. They know what matchups mean. Now let's talk about a team that, you know, I think you're a little more skeptical about when you think about their coaching staff, and that would be Freddie Kitchens with the Cleveland Browns. I think there are a lot of questions, not just from you. You know, it's been the hot thing on Twitter the last few days is to, you know, kind of just take a bomb on, you know, Freddie Kitchens and this offense. But it sounds like a lot of this may be warranted. You know, I mean, just quick breakdown real quick, and then let's jump into what you're seeing. But, you know, they're throwing the ball all the time. 65% of the time, they're dropping back to pass, 35% run. You know, one of the things that is a little crazy to me, and I know it drives our founding father, Matt Wallman, absolutely insane, is inside the five, Jay, we've got 9 plays for the Cleveland Browns this season. 8 of them have come from shotgun, and all 9 of them have been passing attempts. 1 Nick Chubb has 0 rushing attempts from inside the 5. What do you say about that?
Yeah, you know, we talked about the Patriots and how they really design their play-to-play game plan by their personnel. Not every team does that. And the Browns, when I watched them play, are a team that has – they are very dictated by their scheme and their philosophy, which is, you know, you have Freddie Kitchens, you have Todd Monken. It's a spread offense. Baker Mayfield was a spread quarterback in college, so they run a lot of 3 wide receiver sets. They're in the shotgun almost every play. And, you know, regardless of who their talent is, that's the scheme they're going to run. So Odell Beckham's out there, Nick Chubb's out there. Those are 2, you know, top-tier players at their position in the NFL, and their offense is not designed to necessarily highlight either one of those guys. They're calling plays that are just plays, and the receivers are just receivers, and they run their route. And, you know, Odell Beckham is going to be a receiver in the progression. And if it happens to go to him, you know, he's excellent and he'll do a very good job for the most part doing what he's asked to do. But they're not designing the plays to go to Odell Beckham. At least they haven't so far. They're not, you know, building their offense around Nick Chubb's talents as, you know, a runner with excellent vision, who has great contact balance, runs with great power, but also is very explosive, you know, accelerates quickly. Last year had a ton of big runs. They've really designed their offense around Baker Mayfield as a spread quarterback. And so when you start to struggle and you're having a disappointing season relative to what everyone has expected, then you obviously start to question that approach. And I think that the Browns could really benefit from taking a page out of the playbook of the Patriots and really designing their offense to highlight Odell Beckham, Jarvis Landry, and Nick Chubb, because those are 3 very good playmakers. You know, there are just way too many times where Baker Mayfield's dropping back this last week, and his first and second reads are Damian Ratley and Demetrius Harris. And you have Odell Beckham and Jarvis Landry on the other side of the field. You know, it doesn't make any sense to me.
And now, is that something that's being dictated by the coverage he's running or that the defense is running? But to your point, you know, it's like Cleveland isn't going out of their way to design the plays where really, okay, great, the defense may want to take these guys away, but we're not going to let you.
Exactly. Defenses are going to try to take away Odell Beckham. You know, their second priority is going to be stopping Jarvis Landry when we're talking about passing. So if you're letting, and surely it's a pre-snap read where, you know, the defensive coverage is dictating that Mayfield reads these 2 players first. But do you really want to let the defense dictate your passing offense is going to go through, you know, Damian Ratley and Demetrius Harris? No. You know, you want to design play concepts that regardless of...
Doesn't sound very smart, Jay.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Odell Beckham is a guy that is a top 2 or 3 receiver in the NFL. And he's good at everything, but he is especially excellent at a couple things. 1 is ball tracking downfield. You've seen some of the spectacular grabs that he's made. He may be the best slant runner in the NFL. In this past game, you know, they started off, he ran a couple slants, got a couple catches. 1 was off an RPO, and you're like, all right, here we go. They finally figured out, let's get him. You know, he had that long touchdown last week, which wasn't a slant, but it was an RPO where he ran a seam. They're like, all right, they're finally figuring out, let's highlight Beckham in these types of plays. But then for some reason, they went away from that. And, you know, they're running RPOs where, again, it's Damian Ratley who's a primary read for the RPO. And you're just like, why? Like, why are you doing that? And, you know, that's
it. It sounds like Freddie needs to get out of the kitchen and he needs to let Todd Monken come in and stir some of this stuff up. Monken's a guy that we saw with Tampa last year, Jay, do some really cool things with the talent he had. He played to Jameis Winston's strengths. He played to Ryan, to Fitzpatrick's, you know, strengths. He played to DeSean Jackson's strengths. I mean, to me, this, if I'm Freddie Kitchens, you know, and I get it, there's pride and there's those things involved, but it seems like maybe he should just kind of step back and allow the more experienced coordinator to get in there and mix things up a little bit.
Yeah, and I have some concerns about Freddie Kitchens, you know, his comments after the game. People,
hey, Jay, we can't hear you. You have to get closer.
Hello?
Yep, we hear you. Go ahead.
Oh, sorry about that.
No, it's okay.
Freddie Kitchens, his comments after the game, you know, he's being asked by reporters, you know, whether he was going to consider giving Todd Monken the play calling duties. And his answer to me was really reflective of his approach as a head coach. The head coach in the NFL, you know, the X's and O's are obviously important. You have to know what's going on with your team, but you're really more of, you know, a manager, making sure everyone is, you know, doing what they're supposed to do, managing the game, being aware of the big picture. But Kitchens was indicated that Todd Monken isn't even really involved as a true offensive coordinator. He, you know, he said specifically that Monken calling the plays is not feasible, which to me means that Monken has not been, you know, in the game plan prep. He hasn't been designing the offense. He may not even know all of the calls that they're working on, which is really startling to me that the coach would say the offensive coordinator calling plays is not even feasible. And I think that it reflects Kitchens not necessarily being prepared for the head coaching job. And when we talk about the play calling specifically as well, you know, there are a few examples. Everybody talks about the 4th-and-9 draw call. You know, it's an excellent article that I read today by your colleague over at Establish the Run, Josh Hermsmeyer, you know, where he laid out the historical case for that call. And interestingly, no team had ever run a draw on 4th and 7 or longer in the history of the NFL since they started keeping these stats. And so, you know, obviously, inherently, it seems like a bad idea. You know, if your first option gets taken away on a draw, there's no second or third option that's going to be able to get you to convert that fourth down. But it goes deeper than that. You know, there were several times as I was charting their plays this week where literally they were running the exact same play concept 2 or 3 plays in a row. And, you know, I've called plays before, and to me, that's reflective of a play caller who is, you know, losing his head. He's in the weeds. He's a little overwhelmed, you know, not necessarily able to think clearly at the time and think about the next play call. You know, while the play is going on, you have to be thinking about the next play call. If you're calling the same play 2, 3 times in a row, especially when that play is not having success, you know, there's a sequence at the end of the first half where the Browns had the ball near the red zone. They ran a play. There's a flood concept where the Rams were in cover 2. Baker Mayfield tries to throw to Jarvis Landry running a 10, 12 yard out. And he doesn't see the corner in cover 2 who, you know, if you know cover 2, the corner will be there if you're throwing a deep to intermediate out. So that's obviously the first read the quarterback should be making, which Mayfield didn't make the read, but he nearly throws an interception. The play, you know, is a disaster, almost intercepted. The next play is literally the same formation, the exact same play. And so against the same defense. And so when you're calling the same play after the play just nearly blew up in your face, it really makes you wonder what the process is going into calling those plays. You know, other things that are sort of basics of play calling. Everybody thinks of a screen as something you do on 3rd and long. Well, defenses know that too. You know, they were calling screens on, you know, 2nd and 15 screen didn't work. 3rd and 18 screen didn't work. It's like, how often are you going to call a screen in 3rd and long? And, you know, Freddie Kitchens doesn't have much experience calling these plays. And so I think that using Monken's expertise, at least in a, you know, consultatory role, is something that could potentially really help the Browns offense.
So let's talk a second about Baker, and then we'll kind of break this down, the fantasy implications, like we did for the Patriots. So when you look at Baker right now, you know, of the quarterbacks, Jay, that have taken at least 50% of their team's dropbacks, if you look at Pro Football Focus, he's the lowest rated quarterback in the entire league. He's below Eli Manning. He's below Mitchell Trubisky. He's below Jameis Winston, Joe Flacco, Andy Dalton. I mean, he's Derek Carr. He's really not playing well. He's, you know, on the year, he's got 805 yards. He's 7.4 yards per attempt, 3 touchdowns, 5 interceptions, been sacked 11 times. But whenever I start, you know, looking, you know, at Baker, one of the things that, you know, is the most concerning to me, Jay, you know, is his performance under pressure. And this is something, you know, you've heard me talk about before. If I'm evaluating quarterbacks just with the data, one of the things that I really like to do is just look at all phases of their game. And one of the first things I want to do is look at, you know, how are they performing under pressure, right? Because most quarterbacks in the league can be above average. You know, if you just statistically look at them and you're not thinking of the context of being under pressure or not, most quarterbacks in the league can actually look okay when there's not pressure. What separates a lot of these guys, though, is how do you operate with pressure? And right now, Baker Mayfield is the third worst in the league under pressure. You know, he is seeing pressure on 38% of his snaps, which, you know, that's a decent amount. You know, he is, you know, in the top 8 when it comes to that, but that's a bad combination. You know, I mean, if you're one of the 8th most pressured quarterbacks and you're performing third worst, you know, that's not, you know, really a mix that, you know, in my mind that I want to see even as a fantasy owner. And right now, you know, whenever he's under pressure, he's only got 160 yards, Jay. So if you're under pressure 38% of the time, he's only thrown for 160 yards, no touchdowns, 2 interceptions. Like I said, getting sacked 24% of the time. Listen to this, Jay. His completion percentage under pressure is 37%. That's terrible. You expect quarterbacks to come down, you know, and you'll often see guys that might be around 50. You know, that are normally around a 60, and that will happen. But to see someone down at a 37%, especially as often as he is under pressure, you know, this just looks bad. You know, I mean, and the deep ball stuff is just not working for them right now. They're not utilizing play action. So I think that kind of goes back to what you were talking about with the play calling and the sequencing and thinking about ways to keep a defense off balance. They're just not doing any of these things. And, you know, if you look at the way that, you know, Baker's playing,
they're also very rarely using motion, which, yeah, you know, Mayfield, it seems to me that he's been struggling with disguised coverages. One of the ways he can help with the pre-snap read, Patriots do this all the time, where they'll motion a guy from one spot and then just motion him right back to where he was, just to help Tom Brady diagnose the defense. And so when you have a quarterback who's struggling with, you know, the post-snap processing, one of the ways that you can facilitate that and make it easier is motioning a receiver. Even if you move him across the formation and then move him right back to where he lined up, you know, it gives you information about the defense, and that can potentially help Mayfield.
Yeah, absolutely. And I haven't got to watch all of this last, you know, the last game. I watched, you know, as much of it as I could before, you know, having to go hang out with the family, but I haven't gotten to that one on film. But it is something that through the first few weeks, I have noticed that as well. And it was something, you know, that was a big thing in Dallas last year, you know, with, you know, Scott Linehan. And now you're seeing a guy like Kellen Moore do a lot more with that. So that's very interesting. So just, you know, jumping in to the fantasy implications here, Jay, we've got a guy in Mayfield, you know, Matt's even talked about it on Twitter, actually put out some really good videos of, you know, what, you know, Baker looks like. And you're basically just saying that, you know, he's not seeing the field very well. You know, you've echoed some of those thoughts.
Yeah,
his decision-making process doesn't look sound. Yes.
Can I jump in there for a second? Because I realized I didn't comment on Mayfield specifically. I agree with those two things that you said in terms of seeing the field well. I already talked about, you know, the cover 2 read where he's throwing the deep out, you know, essentially almost an interception and coverage that, you know, cognitively, if you ask him, he would know that. Corner.
Hey Jay, we're losing you.
Oh, really? Can you hear me now?
Yeah, I can hear you now. Sorry, go ahead.
That's weird. My mic may be malfunctioning because I'm sitting with it right in front of my face.
Yeah, I can hear you. I hear you good now.
Yeah, so, you know, if you asked Baker Mayfield what to read when he's throwing a deep out, one of the things he knows he has to check is whether the corner is sitting in the flat, ready to undercut that out for an interception. And so, you know, the cognitive process is not making its way to the processing on the field post snap. And I think to me, that means that probably he's a little bit overwhelmed. I think that they're asking a lot of him. They're asking him to make a lot of downfield on time reads. That's not something that he's done a ton of. And honestly, if I were them, I would try to make it a little easier, give him some easier reads, you know, half field reads, some, you know, mesh concepts where you have crossers running that provide a pick. You know, give him some easy throws to get him going before you start asking him to make these downfield multiple level reads, you know, hitting guys on time, because his footwork in the pocket has also been a little bit erratic. You know, he's been feeling pressure when it's not there. He's very quick to, you know, break the pocket outside when maybe stepping up into the pocket would be a better option. And so, you know, if it were me, I would just try to simplify things a little bit more, give him some easy throws, especially early in the game, try to get him in a rhythm. And, you know, also lean heavily on Nick Chubb and the running game. We talked about already how much they're passing in terms of frequency when, you know, they really have a good running back.
So where do you see Baker at this point? You know, he was drafted this year, you know, in season long, you know, formats as a quarterback one. You know, he was typically taken within the top 6 to 8 quarterbacks in most drafts. You know, but we've got 3 full weeks now of him struggling. The coordinator, like you talked about earlier, you know, struggling. Head coach acting as the coordinator, struggling. So I don't really have a lot of, you know, I love the weapons, but I don't have a lot of faith in Baker really, you know, like all of a sudden just turning this around in a big way. Obviously, there are a lot of quarterbacks hurt, so you can't just go drop him to pick up, you know, Jacoby Brissett or something, I suppose. But what are your thoughts on Baker the rest of the way? How do you treat him?
Yeah, I mean, you know, if Kitchens were more open to having assistance from Todd Monken, I'd feel a little more optimistic. His comments after last week's game make me feel like not much is going to change. And so, you know, he's a guy where I'm going to have to see it to believe it in terms of an offensive game plan that really helps facilitate, you know, more motion, you know, more running, highlighting the excellent skill players that they have. And, you know, until I see that, I don't think that he's going to be producing consistently against bad defenses where he has a lot of time to throw. He'll have a big game or two just because, you know, I do think he is talented and they have talent on the team. But he's there, you know, there are a lot of quarterbacks out there in a standard 12-team league, you know, single quarterback that could potentially, you know, score more consistently than Mayfield.
Right. Yeah. Like right now, I mean, you can tell me what your thoughts are, but it's like, and I know this isn't a great example because we have a bye this week here, but I feel better about Jimmy Garoppolo,
you know, honestly, funny,
right now than Baker Mayfield.
In my head, I was thinking, who's a guy that's, you know, might be available that I would choose over him? And Garoppolo was literally the player I was thinking about.
I think Kyler Murray is another example. He's typically like you know, he's going to be rostered, but I mean, I feel better about Jared Goff. I feel better about, heck, I may feel better about Matt Stafford. And that kind of says where this offense is. You know, Stafford's in an offense where, you know, we know they want to run the ball, but, you know, they have been throwing a fair amount. He's got decent weapons around him, and, you know, he's got 830 yards, 6 touchdowns, 2 interceptions. You know, their offense is clicking a little bit, whereas Baker's the opposite, close in yardage, but 3 touchdowns, 5 picks, you know, and I don't know. So I'm with you. I'm not ecstatic about starting Baker. In fact, any way that I can get around starting him now, I mean, I would draw the line. I'm not going to go start Mitch Trubisky over him. You know, we have a couple guys we'll talk about here in a minute, but I'm not going to start Derek Carr or Marcus Mariota above him, you know, but that might be the extent of, you know, Joe Flacco. There's some obvious names, but that might be the end of the list of the guys that I just wouldn't start, you know, right now, over Baker Mayfield. Well, what about Chubb? No, here's the good news for Chubb. This last week, he actually was on the field. This is, you know, the most, actually, I think, in his career. He might have had one other game last year, but was on the field for 99% of the snaps. Was running a route, Jay, on 85% of the dropbacks by Mayfield. Now that you've got David Njoku gone, you've got Demetrius Harris operating. You know, he was often staying back to block. So Chubb getting a little bit of work in the run game. What are the things you would want to be looking for? I know we got to move on here, but if you're looking at Nick Chubb, obviously the volume's going to be there, and they're putting him on the field bell cow status. But what is it that you're looking for that you think could unlock some more value efficiency-wise for Nick Chubb?
Well, I wish that they would run more snaps out of the tee, or at least out of pistol. You know, they're almost always in shotgun where the, you know, Nick Chubb lines up directly next to Baker Mayfield. And it's just a harder formation for running backs to really get their footwork, get their reads, you know, be balanced in terms of when you're running a zone, especially outside zone play. If you want to cut back, you know, when you run it from shotgun, your shoulders are basically, when you start the play, they're already pointed towards the sideline. Whereas when you're from the tee, you know, lined up behind a quarterback who's taking a snap directly under center, the running back's shoulders are pointed at the offensive tackle. And so that difference, you know, instead of having to cut back opposite of the play, so say you're running an outside zone to the left, if you want to cut back to the right from the shotgun, you have to turn 90 plus degrees because your shoulders are already towards the sideline. If you're running it out of this, you know, out of the tee from under center, it's a 45 degree cutback. It's just a lot easier to access those plays. And often the big plays on those outside zone runs come when the running back cuts it back. And so, you know, Mayfield probably doesn't feel very comfortable taking snaps under center, and they have the spread offense where that's not really the norm to do. But if they were to just make that simple adjustment, I think it would help Chubb. And, you know, it would open up play action of the variety that, you know, other than the RPOs where the quarterback's facing the defense, you know, where the quarterback turns his back, makes the handoff. The linebackers often will bite a little bit more on those, could open up the middle of the field for those slants, those seam plays to Odell Beckham, Jarvis Landry.
Yeah. So right now, I mean, just looking at, you know, the data on this. So far this season, Chubb, you know, he's got 58 attempts, 36 of those have come from shotgun. He's got 173 yards, you know, on those carries. So yeah, definitely most of the time, whenever he's getting the ball in his hands, it is coming from shotgun. I'm looking right now at, you know, under center, and that's 22. So yeah, absolutely.
And then also, just giving him the ball when you're in the short red zone, you know, 5 yards and in, obviously it's not rocket.
Yeah, they're not doing that at all.
You know, they lost the game. They had first and goal inside the 10, three timeouts left with 40 seconds to go. And, you know, they ran spread formations. They ran empty formation, no running backs in the backfield. Nick Chubb was actually lined up wide. They ran that and essentially ran the same play concept three out of those four plays. You know, it gets back to the play calling stuff that I talked about earlier. And so, you know, when you have Nick Chubb, for me, if you're spreading them out down in the short red zone, the goal would be to do that, you know, to create deception, run kind of a draw. That may be a good situation actually to run your draw rather than on fourth and nine. But even so, you know, just lining up in a heavy formation and trying to run up the middle in the short red zone would be nice to see for Nick Chubb because he's really good at that.
So for me, I know we've got about 15 minutes here. We're going to hit several things, Jay. We'll kind of go rapid. But, you know, for me, Chubb, I'm still buying. If I can go lift him off of someone, just the fact that I know he's on the field almost for every snap is enough because of how talented the guy is. And I'm going to hope, right, that the coaches, you know, figure some ways out to make some tweaks, but he's just too good not to own. I feel this could still be an opportunity to buy low, you know, on Nick Chubb. So I still think, you know, he's a running back one just because he's on the field all the time. I think Odell Beckham Jr. still obviously is a wide receiver one, you know, and he's a guy that I don't think you can probably buy as low, you know, because he's still doing just enough. But I think to your point, there's a lot left on the bone with Odell Beckham Jr. And honestly, I don't see how it can get worse. I don't see how Baker can play worse than he is now. I don't want to be starting Baker, but if I look at Baker for the next 16, you know, for the next, you know, 13 weeks that we have, it's hard to imagine that he's actually going to be, he can't really be worse. You know, he could be the same, and Odell Beckham Jr. still, you know, right there on the borderline of a wide receiver one, even in this offense today. So if they can get things turned around, there's a lot of upside for him. And then the other guy, I still like Jarvis Landry, because with David Njoku gone, again, it's a sheer volume thing, you know, that I just, now to your point, they're just not designing this stuff for these guys, but it seems like they've got to get, you know, they've got to get things in order. And this offense should run through these three players. And so I am trying to buy low on all of these guys if I can. I still see Landry as a wide receiver three.
Yeah, I'm with you on all of those, you know, from A through Z of what you just talked about there. So let's, you know, cover a little bit more of those deep dives on the Patriots and Browns. You know, really potentially frustrating situations. I think we covered a lot of good ground. Let's talk about, you know, we talked about how the offense isn't really helping Baker Mayfield. A couple of rookie quarterbacks who have benefited from really smart play design, really smart play calling, and, you know, have taken the league by storm. One, or, you know, both of them actually somewhat unexpected if you go based on the draft narratives and especially draft position with Gardner Minshew. But then also, you know, Daniel Jones had his first start for the Giants over in Tampa Bay. You know, led them to a comeback victory where he ran in the go-ahead touchdown to win the game. So, you know, would definitely love to talk about some of the deeper stuff that you see in both of those quarterbacks' game and whether this is something we can expect to continue as we move forward.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, let's start with Jones, you know, where you started. You know, obviously he's a guy that, you know, fantasy owners are really excited about. Now, part of this is we have a lot of injured quarterbacks. This is the most I can ever remember, you know, and some really good ones, you know, with Drew Brees missing, Roethlisberger. Won't recap all that. We've, you know, people are up to speed on that. But what I saw this week, even in, you know, several of my high stake leagues, people that don't normally put a lot of money on quarterbacks, and actually some pretty smart people about football, putting a lot of money on Daniel Jones. And it, honestly, like, I thought he looked good, but it kind of made me scratch my head a little bit, you know. And, you know, one of the things that did surprise me, Jay, whenever I was starting to dig more into Daniel Jones, you know, I talk about quickly looking at, you know, some of these guys, you know, from an under pressure, you know, standpoint. And as I started to dig into, you know, Daniel Jones, it was interesting that, you know, if you look at the stats, he's performing really well under pressure. Like, his NFL quarterback rating is a 126. He's got 254 yards passing. He's got a touchdown, no interceptions, and he's under pressure 60% of the time. You know, now I know that, you know, that's something that, you know, you can break down here in a minute as the way we think about pressure. But I think that's kind of the narrative that honestly, a lot of these people are grabbing onto is, wow, Daniel Jones looked good. He played well under pressure. You know, we didn't expect that. You know, but it was he led a big comeback. Obviously, he put up like 40 fantasy points in most formats, you know, because he had the rushing touchdowns plus the passing touchdowns. And those things all seem super positive. But I know, looking at some of the work that you were putting out on Twitter this week, I loved it. Actually, if you guys haven't seen Jay's video, go to @JayMoyerFB. And you can search for the video that he put out on Daniel Jones and just the way this kind of all played out. But Jay, why don't you kind of break down? Those numbers may sound really good, but what were you seeing, you know, on the film?
Yeah, you know, I think that it was a mixed bag, and that's obviously to be expected from a rookie quarterback. You know, I think with that post that you had mentioned, a lot of people took that as harsh criticism of Daniel Jones. I think Jones actually had, you know, a very promising debut. Obviously, the production is there. The result was there in terms of win losses. But like I said, the offensive game plan was really stellar and designed to allow Jones to get comfortable. You know, there were a lot of half field reads where his primary read is reading between two players, you know, like a high-low concept where one guy runs a deeper route, another one runs a shorter route to the same area of the field. You're reading one defender, you're getting the ball out quickly, or they're running those crossing routes that you saw where Evan Ingram can catch them and run, you know, basically a single read. It's all designed to get the ball to that specific player. And Jones, with those plays, when he felt comfortable, you know, showed actually improved footwork from college. His you know, controlled pocket movement was much better for the most part. And he was throwing very accurate passes, a lot of good balls on those plays. And then on top of that, there were a couple plays that were really outstanding. You know, both of them, actually, he had pressure in his face from the right side. which, you know, the opposite of the quarterback's blind side. He's able to slide away, you know, keep his shoulders pointed downfield. In one case, threw a deep out early in the game, you know, pinpoint pass, excellent play. And then later on in the game, you know, slid away from right-sided pressure. The defensive end on the left side then got close. He flipped his shoulders around. And with his momentum sort of falling towards the sideline, threw, you know, roughly 30, 40-yard pass in the air for a deep post down the middle, right on the money. Not quite a touchdown, but nearly a touchdown. And really that's, you know, in terms of when you're talking about quarterback play, those are some of the best plays you'll see on Sunday. Really, really impressive stuff. Where he struggled was when he got outside of those simpler play concepts. So there were a couple times where he made full field reads. One, you know, he's reading to his left, came back across the field to a seam route down the middle, forgot about the safety that was there. The safety jumped the route, hit the safety in the hands, should have been an interception, but it was dropped. Another one, he reads, starts off again, reading to the left, comes back to the right. By the time he works through his full progression, the entire line is collapsed on him. You know, he's not necessarily aware that that's happening, and he actually loses a fumble. And, you know, he had a couple lost fumbles in the game. And that's one of the things that I saw from him at Duke, was that often he could lose track of the rush. And, you know, this left him prone to fumbling. And in the preseason, he had issues fumbling. In this game, he lost two fumbles. Had another play that was initially ruled a fumble, but then got, you know, overturned as an incomplete pass. And actually had a sequence there when they were losing and they had to open up the passing offense a bit, where, you know, he was taking a while to process things on more complex reads. He got sacked four plays in a row, and it culminated with that second lost fumble. So when he's making these complex reads, you know, it's taking too long. And then also, you know, if the initial play is not there, one of the keys to successful quarterback play in the NFL is being able to lose a play without losing the game. So, you know, if you get to your fourth read and nothing's there, there's nothing you can do, but don't throw the interception. Just either throw it away or take, you know, a sack or try to run. But throwing a pick or fumbling, those are types of things that lose the game. And that, you know, his second lost fumble in the fourth quarter really should have lost the game, but the Buccaneers couldn't quite capitalize. And then actually, interestingly enough, on that final drive where they drove down and scored, they went back to those simple reads, those simple play concepts that got them success in the first half. And he was able to move them down the field before, you know, actually on the touchdown, his initial reads weren't there. And rather than try to force something, make it happen, you know, the rush at all sort of worked his way around him. He just ran up the middle and nobody was there. And so it was a nice play, nice touchdown where, you know, the initial thing wasn't there and he was able to make it a play that wasn't a disaster. And so those are the things that you look for, you know, from a rookie to grow. And the question is, will defenses be able to take away the easy stuff before he can learn how to do the more difficult stuff? And that is what will determine if he can continue his success as we go down the road.
So just, you know, based on what you've seen this first game, I mean, obviously it's very limited, you know, sample size, but you did see some concerns that continue to crop up. You saw, you know, that you had heading into the draft. Some of these things, you know, like you said, are to be expected, and there are ways where he actually, you know, performed better, right? And you saw some improvement versus what he had done. You know, a lot of folks, it looks like, are going to be depending on him this week, you know, as a QB1. You know, I had, you know, I've actually had some people tweet at me that, you know, there are people that have benched Carson Wentz for Daniel Jones, you know, in their leagues. And, you know, last night, you know, Wentz, you know, threw, you know, several touchdown passes. So, you know, I'm just wondering, or I think he threw two. I don't remember if it was two or it was three, but yeah. Okay. So it was three, but how far should people take this? You know, we talked a second ago about kind of where Baker sits in our mind. I mean, are you thinking he's somebody that, now I know this is independent of matchups, but if you just start thinking, you know, of where he sets in the pecking order, to me, it feels like folks are overreacting a bit too on the bullish side, right, of what they think Daniel Jones can do.
Yeah, well, when you have a situation where, you know, you have what he showed last week, where I'm not convinced he can win consistently if his first or second option are taken away, that is really what determines consistent quarterback play in the NFL, because eventually you run up across defenses who are able to take away your first and second option more frequently than what the Bucs could do last week. And, you know, the Buccaneers aren't renowned for having an excellent pass defense, at least, you know, the past couple years and early on this year. So as he gets into those situations, the key will be when the easy stuff isn't there, what happens? And, you know, is he able to take off and run and pick up 5, 10, 15 yards and a touchdown? Or, you know, does he force a throw, not realizing the safety's there, and is it intercepted? I think that we can expect a lot of turnovers. And then, you know, whether his production will make up for those turnovers will really be dependent on the quality of the defense and how consistently they can make it difficult on him. And I think that there will be games where, you know, playing against good pass defenses, he really struggles and could end up having a week that really kills your team in terms of turnovers, you know, not much production.
It sounds similar to what we've, and it hasn't happened necessarily this year, but it sounds similar to kind of like a Josh Allen, you know, situation. You know, he has these really good games, you know, and he'll score the rushing touchdowns and do those things. He'll hit some big plays, but then he gets up against some of these better defenses. And we're going to see this with Josh Allen this weekend, like the Patriots, that know how to take away the things you like. And in those games, you know, Josh Allen has struggled a lot more. So it sounds like Daniel Jones almost kind of fits into that same bucket for now. You know, that could definitely change over the next few weeks, and we may need to revisit this, you know, in a couple of weeks. But it sounds like he's a similar type player. But what about Gardner Minshew? I know you brought him up. You know, we've got just a few minutes left here. He's eighth in the league versus pressure right now. Now, he's not really pushing the ball down the field. Only 11% of his passes have gone for over 20 yards. You know, that's a little below the league average. His average depth of target is a 6.7. But, man, he's making plays whenever it comes to, you know, touchdown passes. You know, he's getting a touchdown pass on 5.7% of his attempts, which isn't something that you always see, you know, with someone that's not pushing the ball down the field, you know, quite as much. But he seems to be a guy that really has a handle on the game. You know, what are you seeing?
Yeah, in terms of Minshew, I'm even less convinced than I am on Jones. I think the game plan is more limited what the Jaguars have been doing compared to what the Giants did last week. You know, you talk about simple throws. There were a lot of design single option throws. So, you know, wide receiver screens, rub routes, where really the quarterback is making no read. It's just dictated this is where he's going. His success on downfield throws typically came in the, you know, pre-snap alignment shows that you have a press corner with no safety help over the top. Before the snap, you're deciding, all right, this receiver's running a fade. I'm going to throw it. You know, that touchdown down the left sideline to DJ Chark was of that variety. And really, all of his downfield passing has been that type of you know, play call, that type of pre-snap read. And so, you know, again, when you talk about facing better defenses that are able to take away those first options, you know, if DJ Chark isn't able to come up with these contested catches that he's been able to so far, where he's facing, you know, a single corner who's usually not the best corner on the team, will they be able to convert those downfield passes? And I think that the touchdown percentage you mentioned that is, you know, very, it's up there in terms of where you would expect, you know, the quarterback rankings to be. I don't see that necessarily continuing because these aren't plays that have a high likelihood of success. And I think that, you know, that's likely to regress to the mean. You just can't really count on, you know, contested catches coming through as frequently as they have with Minshew and Chark.
So do you see Chark, you know, cause a lot of people are, you know, Minshew, he's probably rostered, but a lot of people, I don't know how much they're depending on him. You know, he doesn't seem to have near the buzz like of a Daniel Jones, and it sounds like for good reason to your point. But when you think about like actionable information for folks listening, what should people do with DJ Chark? Is he a guy that you would sell high right now?
He is someone I would sell high. I think that some of the issues with this game are still there. He often rushes through releases, has really struggled creating separation. If you look at his big plays, they've typically been when a defensive back is in the back pocket. You know, the deep play down the right sideline this week was against cover three, where Malcolm Butler just really made a very poor play on the ball. And, you know, gets back to the issues with Minshew. Malcolm Butler's in position playing cover three, and he still threw it. And, you know, often that pass is going to be batted down or even intercepted. And so it's these kind of low likelihood, you know, dangerous pass plays that I don't think will necessarily continue going forward. So I would sell Tark high. D.D. Westbrook is a guy that hasn't had a ton of production, but the Jaguars are still designing a lot of plays to go to him. He dropped a touchdown pass last week. You know, he's typically a guy who has pretty good hands and tracks the ball well, so I think that that will improve. So he's a guy that I could potentially see buying very low. I think he'd be really cheap at this point. You know, he's a guy who I think will continue to get volume. And especially if teams start giving more attention to the outside receivers, Chark and Conley, it will open up the middle of the field for Westbrook. That teams haven't started to do that yet, but, you know.
I love that call. You know, if you in Westbrook, you know me, on the data side, what I love about him, you know, and you already hit on some of it, but it's if you think about when this team is passing, he's the guy out there. 97% this last week, right, of the times that Gardner Minshew dropped back to pass, D.D. Westbrook was in a route. You know, Conley was at 82%. D.J. Chark was at 88%. And if you look at where he's getting to work from, the first 3 weeks, the slot, 85%, 88%, and 88% of his routes. So he's at 87%. And, you know, his average depth of target, to your point, he's the guy working, you know, intermediate and underneath. So his average depth of targets have been 2.8, which you want to see it higher than that, but he's at a 7.2 and a 6.9. So now he's at a 5.9. And last week he had 30% of the targets, Jay. So, I mean, he's still leading the team in, you know, from a target share percentage, he's at 20% and Chark's at 19%. And he was a guy that I'm with you. I'm thinking, you know what, that volume is eventually going to come through. I don't, you know, his upside is probably capped because of Minshew and the way that this offense operates. But I'm with you. I just think that, you know, with the amount of opportunity he's getting, and now that teams are going to have 3 weeks of film on the Jaguars, and Chark and Conley are going to start to get some more respect, and I would see teams wanting to start to take away some of those things, I feel like, to your point, Westbrook is in a really good situation, and he's a great buy low candidate.
Yeah.
Look, just real quick, while we're on the Jaguars and we got to bounce here, but just real quick, what are your thoughts with Fournette? I mean, the guy never leaves the field, plays 86%, 97%, 100% of snaps, you know, rushing attempts. He's over 70% of the team's rushing attempts every week. Man, he's seeing record numbers, Jay, as far as targets, 18%, 18%, 27%. But man, the guy can't hardly move forward. If he didn't have that one big play last week against Tennessee, I mean, we're looking at a game where he potentially has all those carries for negative yards.
Yeah, well, the Titans really focused on him as the, you know, for their defensive game plan. They were really aggressive stopping the run, and I think it stems back to not having that respect for the outside threats and Minshew at quarterback. You know, if I'm a defensive coordinator, I am going to say, let's make Gardner Minshew beat me. And, you know, really, when you look at the ways that they scored, he didn't really consistently beat the Titans. They had a turnover that was down in the red zone, scored a touchdown off of that. Other than that, the Jaguars really struggled to move the ball. You know, had one drive that ended up in a touchdown. Fournette had his big run. But there were a lot of struggles. And so Fournette, in terms of a fantasy approach, is going to get a ton of volume. He'll get a lot of carries. He gets a lot of receptions also. They're designing a lot of the pass plays for him, a lot of screens, getting check downs. So PPR, you know, he's not a guy you think of like a James White, but he's gonna score points just because of volume. And like we said with D.D. Westbrook, if they can start earning some respect for their downfield passing game, for those outside receivers, then that is only going to benefit Fournette because defenses won't be able to so aggressively play the run. So he's a guy that, you know, I'm still buying in fantasy because he's just guaranteed to get that volume.
So Fournette's a buy, probably an RB2 right now, but he's got the RB1 upside just because of the sheer volume, but you're typically going to grade him in that RB2 range. Are we on the same page with that?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, cool. Anything else we need to hit on here, Jay, before we, you know, hop?
No, I think we can wrap it up. You know, just want to again point out where people can find both my work and Dwayne's work. Obviously, this podcast is hosted by Matt Waldman and his RSP site, mattwaldmanrsp.com. You know, Matt has been doing it for nearly a decade. It's really, you know, excellent, or more than a decade, I think, at this point, really provides excellent analysis. You can find Dwayne and my work there as well. obviously Dwayne's work, as we mentioned, over at Football Guys and Establish the Run. Again, new hire over there. Congratulations, Dwayne. But we will be back at it in 2 weeks with more meat to chew on. We'll get a little more information on these rookie quarterbacks, see if the Browns can figure out a way to optimize their skill talent.
Yeah, I'm super excited because, I mean, I don't know about you, just kind of close it out with this, but I feel like the first 2 weeks were really just an extension of the preseason because so many players didn't play in the preseason, specifically quarterbacks. Then we had quarterback injuries, offenses having to redesign, the way that they want to attack other teams, you know, with their new signal callers. It was almost a record year for the number of new offensive coordinators or new head coaches we had in the league. They're still trying to implement their schemes. So I really just feel like we're just now, Jay, in context of this season, we're just now starting to really get some real data points. And so I'm super excited to see what the next 2 weeks bring, because I think at that point we're going to have a much better picture of what these offenses really are.
Yeah, really the first 2 weeks are definitely the real preseason at this point with all the changes they've had to offseason practice schedules. And really the first 4 weeks are where teams are establishing their identity, getting in a rhythm. So really the trends that we've seen won't really stabilize until we get past week 4 into 5. So yeah, I mean, I think that these weeks will be really nice to see because they'll have a little more correlation to what we can expect for the rest of the season.
All right, man. Well, great job as usual. Love the film breakdowns. We'll be back with you guys here in another 2 weeks. I'll be bringing the data. Jay will be, grinding away on the tape. So until then, you guys, good luck in your fantasy leagues. See ya.